Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner right here on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. We're now about to have another conversation with Dr. Lena Wen, who is the Baltimore City Health Commissioner, who joins us pretty regularly these days, which is good. Lena, good to see you. Welcome to the program.
Nice to see you again, Mark. How are you?
I'm very well. And you all can join us here at 410-319-8888. You can email us, talk@steinershow.org, tweet us at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888, to give us a shout when you have a minute. We'd love to hear from you. So let's just start with saying hello. Hi.
Well, that's always a good place to begin. And nice to be on your show and to talk to you about health in the city.
Yeah, there's so much to talk about. So we have the half an hour today together, so we'll save some of the stuff for the next time. But there's been a big campaign around sugar-sweetened beverages in the city against them, to limit them. So talk a bit about that. I mean, it's always kind of a mixed bag, and we've done a number of shows on this over the years, but what is this latest push?
Sure. So I have seen something very disturbing in my clinical practice, as have my colleagues, which is that for the first time in history, we are seeing children with adult-onset diseases. I have 8-year-olds who come in who weigh 280 pounds. I see
8-year-olds, 280 pounds?
That's right, who are morbidly obese. I see 14-year-olds with adult-onset diabetes, 18-year-olds with heart problems from obesity, from diabetes, from heart disease, and from high blood pressure. And we know that one out of every three of our children here in Baltimore City are overweight or obese. That's a lot. And we also know that physical activity, of course, is very important, but that the number one contributor to childhood obesity is sugary drinks. If there is one thing that I can urge for parents and caregivers to cut out of their children's diet, it's sugary drinks like sodas, like fruit drinks, like Gatorade, things that really have no nutritious value whatsoever. And the reason we launched this campaign is actually the idea came from families, from youth groups, and from parents who said they had no idea how dangerous these sugary drinks are. Because you look at the advertising for them, you look at Beyonce, you look at a basketball star, and they hold up a sugary drink and they talk about how nice it is to drink and how cool it is, without mentioning how much that sugary drink contributes to tooth decay, to obesity, to diabetes. And for us, it's a question of leveling the playing field. We want to get the information out to consumers, to parents, and to caregivers, so they can make the best choices for their own families.
Folks, do join us at 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on that? I mean, it's a very hard one for most people to do, to keep people away from things like that. The advertising is so omnipresent that it, you know, that when you think the word Coke, this is in people's heads. Pepsi, those things are there. Gatorade, for if you're an athlete, replacing your electrolytes. I mean, we see it everywhere. What exactly, strategically, can you do?
Well, you're right that the marketing and advertisements are everywhere. Big beverage spend billions of dollars, literally billions of dollars, with marketing, and that's their prerogative to do. But we, as the health officials of the city, have to make sure that people have access to accurate information. That's why we propose legislation that's going to be in front of City Council next week, that is sponsored by Councilman Mosby, that the Health Department very much supports, for warning labels where sugary drinks are sold. It's fine if people want to buy sugary drinks for their families, but they should have the information about what it is that sugary drinks do. In the same way that there are warning labels on cigarettes, there are warning labels on alcohol. People can still choose to smoke and drink alcohol, but they should know about the consequences, the proven science-based consequences of their choice. And again, for us, this is leveling the playing field, because companies disproportionately market to communities of color. And we want to be able to empower consumers to make the best choices for their families.
But it's one of the problems in doing this, go to the phones here, but isn't one of the problems with this, though, that, I mean, when the campaign started against cigarettes, it took a long time to get there. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that happened was cigarettes were no longer allowed to have television advertising. They could no longer have commercials doing football games, basketball games. I mean, and that's where the rubber meets the road, it seems to me, that when you're talking about an industry that is as huge as the soft drink industry in this country, that information is important, But unless you get at the heart of that, you don't stop it or you don't blunt it.
We have to start somewhere. And for us, we have to, we all would agree, the beverage companies would probably also agree that we have to get information out to our consumers.
I'm not sure they would agree with you at all.
I don't think that they would agree about the mechanism, but for them to oppose accurate information is more challenging than opposing something like taxes or regulation. And that's why we have to start somewhere. We also launched a campaign in our city called Rethink Your Drink. One out of every four of our children, our kids in Baltimore City, drinks a regular 12-ounce of soda every single day. And we have found out through speaking to parent groups and community groups that parents don't know about how dangerous these sugary drinks are. So we've launched a campaign, Rethink Your Drink, to let people know about the dangers, but also to encourage parents to make healthier choices for their families. And that's what we hope that the legislation is going to be doing too. We'll start with education and getting unbiased, science-based information out.
Let's open the phones, 410-319-8888. Dr. Lena Nguyen is with us, Baltimore City Health Commissioner. You can also tweet us at Mark Steiner and email us to talk@steinershow.org. 410-319-8888 is the number. Your thoughts and ideas for Dr. Nguyen. Mimi, you're on the air in Baltimore. Welcome.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, Mimi.
Real simply, sugar is a strong addiction. It causes us to want more. So even without the advertising, it doesn't matter what form it's in, because I am in recovery from food addiction. And if I keep it out of my system, I don't crave it. So it might be that the children and people get most of their sugar from these drinks, but it's just it in any form. There's like 100 names for sugar that can trigger it. Even the artificial ones, there are sugar in a lot of those, but just the sweet taste tells our body we want more. And like alcohol, it's refined carbohydrate. I don't know that sugar cane in the field would cause the same problem. So that's all I want to say. It's a big issue, and diabetes is a disease of addiction, in my opinion, because it's not like we choose to be amputated and still have a tasty cake. It's just a tasty cake overwhelms us. And I'm sorry I keep bringing up funny things to you, Mark.
No, they're not funny, but it's humorous where you describe them. But you're right. I think that one of the things that it's really hard to kind of wrestle with around all these things and address is that many of the things that I associate with the beginnings of this Western world, whether it's sugar or tobacco, that have created these addictions in the world that didn't exist before, and they are addictions. I mean, I think even in my own home, my wife just for the most part stays away from sugar altogether because of what happens when she stops and what happens to her body, the way she feels, the way she can move, and I do my best to stay away from it as well. But because it is. I mean, it's something that's in our face all the time. You can't – if you pick up a package in a store and you look on the back of the ingredients, sugar's always at the top of the ingredients, almost everything you buy. I mean, that is part of the problem. It's beyond just the drinks.
Absolutely. That Mimi, you're right. There are hidden sugars in so many of our foods and drinks, and they're not necessarily labeled as sugar. They might be high fructose corn syrup.
Right.
And that's one of the reasons why the food industry is under heavy pressure to change their labeling. Last week, actually, the FDA announced that they'll be changing the way that labeling is done, because otherwise consumers can't tell if sugars are being called a lot of different things. From our standpoint in the Baltimore City Health Department, though, we focus on getting on doing the easy things, making the right choice the easy choice. And so that's why we say we're not asking you to cut out all types of sugars from your diet altogether. I mean, that might be a bit of a difficult ask for anyone. But we're saying if there's one thing that you can do so that your children will be healthy, if there's one thing you can do to improve your diet, it is to cut out sugary drinks. Maybe you can't start all at once. Maybe you're drinking 3 sodas a day. Well, cut it to 2 sodas a day as a start. Of course, we hope that it's none and you'll drink water instead. But make an easy choice today. You can only do that, though, with the accurate information. And that is what the warning label is intended to do.
So what are the chances this bill will pass? I mean, I know that the beverage industry has a huge lobbying force, and you know, whether it's your city council or whether it's Annapolis, wherever that may be. So what's your political sense about where this is going to go? Or are you allowed to talk about that?
Well, I'm hopeful. You know, my I'm a doctor. I'm a scientist. I'm not a politician, and so I cannot speak to what our representatives are going to do. But I have seen the groundswell of support. Our legislation for warning labels in the city has been endorsed by so many pediatricians, basically from every hospital and clinic across your city. It's been endorsed by community groups and faith leaders. We actually have a forum tonight for those of you who are interested, I believe at 6 o'clock. That's going to be in one of our local churches. And we invite everyone to come and lend us your voice as well. The city council hearing is next week. We welcome everyone to come and share your perspectives on this too. And so I know that our elected representatives also very much care about the health and well-being of our citizens. They recognize that health is tied to everything, that if we don't have a healthy city, that we're not going to be able to improve education in our youth, that we're not going to have a healthy workforce, that we're not going to create jobs. And so I'm optimistic, but also this is something that all of us can be involved in speaking to our legislators about too.
So 410-319-8888, Lena Wen is with us. Of course, Dr. Lena Wen is Baltimore City Health Commissioner, physician, and has been asked to stay on in the next administration, I understand, as well, right?
Well, I am fully committed to the city. My husband and I live in the city. We are all in on Baltimore. There's so much that we've done in the last year and a half since I've been here, but along with my great team, we also have so much more to do. And we also, you know, I say this all the time, but I really feel like I have the best job in the world. I get to work on really important health issues. I get to work with an amazing team in the city with stakeholders and community members and other people throughout. And I it would be my great honor and privilege to be able to stay and work for a city that I love.
So, very diplomatically put.
But it's true.
I think it's not true.
It's even better. It's even better if the diplomatic way is true, right?
It's true. But that well said. But, so I'm going to go back to where we started here before I move on to another subject. I mean, when you talked about seeing grossly overweight children and other doctors seeing them and talking about the onset of adult diabetes issues with children, I mean, how deep is that and severe? I mean, what numbers are we talking about? How much of a growth is there or has there been?
The epidemic of childhood obesity is called an epidemic for a reason. I mean, when we've reached a point where one out of every three of our children are overweight or obese, we know this is not just a problem that's confined to particular people who are more likely to be overweight. We know that this is something that's really spread out in our society. And a lot of it does have to do with misleading advertising from food and beverage associations. But that's something that we can fight back on and say, now we recognize that this is a problem, so we're going to make the healthy choice the easy choice. This is why, for example, last year we introduced healthy vending in our city. We shouldn't just have vending machines, and this is for adults as well as for kids, with just regular sodas, with chips. I mean, what if you're hungry and you just want a snack and there's nothing healthy available? That's why we are all about making the right choices and having accurate information so that people can do that. Of course, food access is a big part of it too. One out of every three African Americans in Baltimore City lives in a food desert, which means that they don't have easy access to healthy fruits and vegetables. And if all you have is your corner store where you can maybe buy liquor, maybe you can buy chips, maybe you can buy pretzels, but you can't buy fruits and vegetables. Maybe there's one shriveled up brown banana that's available. That's not good either. So that's why we're also working on expanding our virtual supermarket where we deliver food to individuals living in food deserts in partnership with ShopRite, with helping our corner stores to become healthy stores. I mean, these are all important too.
And now we're seeing the things like Mars is closing all of its stores in Baltimore. Half of them being bought out. I mean, a third of them are being bought out by the stores, but the two-thirds of them are closing.
And that's why so much of our work in the health department is also supporting our local businesses, because we believe that it has to be done in partnership. We believe that our businesses do want to do the right thing when it comes to providing healthy options. But the issue with sugary drinks is so important because it is the single most important contributor to childhood obesity. If there is one thing that I can do, if I could wave my magic wand and do one thing that will improve the health of millions of children across the country and thousands of children across Baltimore, it would be eliminating sugary drinks.
The politics of it, though, I mean, are there moves or thoughts afoot about introducing legislation, whether it's statewide or citywide, that bans outdoor advertising, bans the kind of advertising for sugary drinks? I mean, that to me is may be one of the few ways that you begin to counteract it. I mean, because it has to be, just like as in tobacco, people still smoke cigarettes, but just like in tobacco, there was a groundswell in this country because of the ban on advertising. There was a groundswell when the medicine showed its link to death in America, and there was this mass consciousness began to happen, which can only happen if it's attacked in a larger way, it seems to me. I mean, not belittling or diminishing what you're saying access to information is, which I think is important, but that if it doesn't go beyond, it's kind of hard to blunt it.
And public health is all about being on the right side of history. Public health was on the right side of history for tobacco, talking about the reasons why cigarettes are so dangerous, why nicotine is so addictive, why it causes cancer, long before it was accepted by everybody, when at the time cigarettes were still considered to be cool. We are on the right side of history when it comes to sugary drinks too. There's a lot that we would want to do to stop the consumption of sugary drinks, but I do think that counteracting the pervasive advertising with accurate information is the lowest hanging fruit, and that's what we have to start with.
We open the phones at 410-319, pardon me, 319-8888, and Will, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, good morning to you and your guest today.
Good morning, Will.
I wanted to speak about what the doctor is speaking about, because I grew up in Baltimore. As a matter of fact, the church that she's having a meeting in, I graduated from that in the sixth grade. One of the important things that she spoke about is what used to be directly across from that church was one of the best open-air fruit and vegetable markets in the part of town, Novak's, which has been long gone. And as you said, there's such a food desert in our inner city. I used to joke with one of my friends, and I am in the health field, I'm a nurse. We saw these kids getting so big at such a young age, and this was 30 years ago. You know, I'm 54 myself now. And I used to joke and call it the potato chip theory. Because when you see a kid walking down the street, it's with a bag of chips and a colored soda of some sort. And from that, it's just, that's, you know, grown into what you're saying. You're seeing kids at 8 years old, 240 pounds, or adult onset diabetes. And the field that I work in is actually educating folks about how to turn this around, you know, and that's the part that's missing so much for the kids and the older adults. And because when I speak to them on a daily basis, the one thing that they're talking about is that they didn't know, you know, how to read food labels on a package. Don't trust what you see on the front. Flip it open on the back. You know, read the ingredients,
right.
You know.
So, by the way, what church was that you grew up in?
Southern Baptist Church.
Southern Baptist, which is where the meeting is going to be held.
Absolutely.
That's correct.
So thanks so much for that call, Will. I mean, I think that's... It is an important piece of it. So So I'm being very curious how this legislation kind of pushes through the city council. I mean, I know how much pushback there is.
We would be too, but again, we are hopeful that our legislators will listen to the voices of our community, who are saying that this is what they want. I mean, this is where we got the idea from. We didn't pull up this idea from thin air. We had our community members say to us, we didn't know exactly what Will was saying, that we didn't know. And what we do in the health department has to focus on the things that we can do today, because there are too many people in our city, just like too many people across our country, who talk about the problems and who talk about all the just the pervasive issues that exist. And yes, there are many deep-rooted problems. Yes, there is systemic reform that has to happen. But there are also things that we can do today. So cutting out sugary drinks from your diet is something very tangible. It's not simple, but it's a straightforward one step that you can do today. Similarly, when we talk about issues like Zika virus, even if we don't have a vaccine for Zika, we can prevent Zika, prevent mosquitoes by getting rid of standing water in our backyard. I mean, there's
so talk a bit about that. So what is the danger for Zika virus here in Baltimore, and what is the health department's stance, and what are you doing?
So Zika is everywhere in the news now, and so I want to clarify some misconceptions, basically talk about facts and myths. The fact is that Zika is a virus that's carried mainly by mosquito, or transmitted mainly by mosquito. It can also be transmitted through sexual contact, but mosquito is the main way, and through a particular type of mosquito called the Aedes mosquito. Another fact is that the information about Zika changes literally every day. And I want to emphasize this because there is new evidence, new science coming out every day about it. And so you may be hearing the news this week and be wondering, why is it different from last week? Well, it's because scientists are working on it around the clock, because our international health authorities, the World Health Organization and the CDC in the U.S. have said that Zika is a global public health emergency. The reason it's so dangerous is not for the average person, it's for pregnant women, because Zika is linked to severe birth defects in the unborn child. And so women can be infected with Zika during any trimester of pregnancy, and it could result in severe brain damage and other birth defects for their child, which is a very serious health issue. So important things for everyone to know in Baltimore. First is, if you are a pregnant woman, look at the CDC website and look at the areas around the world where there is active Zika transmission ongoing. You should not go to these areas, or at least talk to your doctor before traveling. If you are a partner of a pregnant woman, a male sexual partner of a pregnant woman, and you have traveled to these places with Zika transmission ongoing, you need to wear a condom or abstain from sex every time during the entire course of the pregnancy, because there is a risk of sexual transmission as well, with the same potential birth defects as we talked about. Third most important thing for everyone to know is that Zika could come to Baltimore. The maps of where the two types of Aedes mosquitoes are that are known or could possibly transmit Zika include Baltimore. It could come to the city. There is
those
no
mosquitoes
vaccine.
Are here? I mean, the mosquitoes that carry that? I'm not saying the ones that they're carrying it, but the mosquito species that does carry it, they're in Baltimore?
They could. So the type, there are two types of Aedes mosquitoes. The type of mosquito that is known to carry Zika has been found, although in very small numbers, in Baltimore. The other type of Aedes mosquito, the second type, that is found in Baltimore City, could carry Zika. So again, all
but
of this
no
is changing.
No evidence of that yet.
No evidence of local transmission of Zika within Baltimore City yet, but our weather has just started to turn. It was pretty cold until this weekend. It was our first really nice weekend. And along with nice weather comes mosquitoes. And so there is no vaccine. There is no treatment. There is no cure for Zika. That's why the most important thing that you can do is to prevent yourself from getting stung by mosquitoes. So check around you right now. Do you have screens on every door? Make sure that you have screens or air conditioning if you can. Look around your yard. Do you have any form of standing water? Even a small bottle cap can be the breeding ground for mosquitoes. So that's something that everyone can do today and help out your neighbors.
So I was thinking, as soon as you said that, I was thinking about the half an hour we just did on this housing film that New Lens did. There are probably tens of thousands of families in the city of Baltimore that don't have screens. They don't have screens in their doors, they don't have screens in their windows. I mean, the poorer the community, the more vulnerable people are.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And this is why, just like Ebola, just like most other diseases in the world, Zika is a disease of poverty. When we look at what's happened around the world, in Puerto Rico, in Brazil, and other areas that are affected by Zika, it's urban areas with concentrated populations and concentrated poverty that are the most affected. Because for the reasons you mentioned, Mark, of most, well, not most, but many of the individuals in our community may not have screens. They may not have the same prenatal care as if they live in other counties in Maryland. And our individuals here in the city are already the most vulnerable people in our state, some of the most vulnerable in our country. And that's why we have been in Baltimore City. We have been so active in advocating for funding. Our mayor has been wonderful. She's already allocated, even in a time of very difficult fiscal situation for the city, she's allocated $500,000 to fight Zika. Unfortunately, though, we are facing a cut from our feds and from the state through the feds
I thought they were just giving more money for Zika. Didn't the governor announce that?
Here's the problem, though. Because our U.S. Congress has not approved President Obama's allocation, the president asked for $1.9 billion for fighting Zika. Some of that would go to vaccine research. Some of that would go towards treatment. Some of it would go towards public health preparedness in our cities. Congress did not approve that. And as a result, the only way the CDC could get funding was to take money away from states and cities, and therefore cities, that would be our emergency preparedness funding. which actually means that instead of getting more money when we're facing this public health crisis, we are getting funding taken away from us. In fact, we are standing to lose 1/3 of all of our staff who would work on disaster preparedness and emergency preparedness in order to fight Zika on the national level, which is really important to fight Zika on the national level. But that should not, that's robbing Peter to pay Paul. I mean, it's hurting those of us, especially those of us in cities like Baltimore, that already face the worst health problems and the worst health outcomes. And that's not just a health issue, but one of social justice, too.
So, because as you said, most of the money you get in your budget is not city money, it's federal money and some state money.
Right, correct? Exactly. Exactly. Right. And so this is an issue that, I mean, I know that. So Senator Cardin has raised this issue through a roundtable last week. Our other senators and members of Congress from this area have been very active in working to get us the funding that we need. But I, again, urge all of your listeners, too, to say, look, the health and educational and economic costs of Zika virus are unimaginable. One child born with severe brain damage is going to cost our society millions of dollars over the course of his or her lifetime. Not to mention that it's just inhumane. I mean, we can't sit by and look at what could happen and not look to prevent this illness instead. And so we really need the funding. And so ask your member of Congress to call others and out on this really important issue.
So we only have a couple minutes left. I want to get into this much earlier. We don't have time for it now, though. But I'm curious, very quickly, what conversations you're having with the folks in the health department around Safe Streets and this upsurge in violence that's happening in Baltimore?
Well, we know that violence is a public health issue. This is why Safe Streets, which is our program where we hire individuals from the communities that they serve to walk the streets and mediate violence. That's why we believe in the model of Safe Streets, because if violence spreads from person to person, just like a disease does, like Zika or Ebola or something else, then we also know that there's a way to stop it through individuals who are mediating violence too. The problem is that we only have Safe Streets in 5 locations across our city. There are, and we have the vast majority of the city do not have a Safe Street site. And we hope that there'll be more funding that's devoted to stopping violence before it starts, instead of just focusing on what happens after violence begins. Which, I mean, as an emergency physician, I fully understand why you have to treat violence too. If somebody was shot, if somebody was stabbed, you absolutely have to treat that person and devote resources there. But we should also focus our resources on prevention and on conflict mediation, and also on looking at individuals not just as the perpetrators of violence, but also as the victims of trauma. And so part of what we're doing this year, in addition to looking to expanding Safe Streets, we're also launching a citywide trauma initiative to build resilience in our children, to educate everyone, including our city employees, but also youth groups and community groups about how to understand and recognize the impact of trauma so that we can build a community-level conversation and solution around violence.
Well, we're out of time for today, but Dr. Lena Nguyen will be coming back here very soon to complete our conversation, talk about a great deal more violence and the things in our community and the stuff that the City Health Department is working on. Dr. Lena Nguyen, of course, is the Baltimore City Health Commissioner. Lena, thanks so much for joining us once again. Good to have you in the studio.
Wonderful to talk to you. Thank you, Mark.
We're going to take a brief break, and when we come back, we're going to take a look at Roots and see what you think. Did you watch it? Join us.